Oh, that's right. How you doing this afternoon? Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with my very special guest, Ann Parks, who is running for re-election to District 12 for the House of Representatives right here in South Carolina. How you doing today, Ann?
I'm doing fine.
It's looks like I understand you had a busy morning this morning. Handed out some money, did you?
We did. We sure did.
What did you do?
We got $50,000 for the Greenwood Promise Program. Senator Nicholson was initiated and had it put in the budget on the Senate side. And when we finished the budget, it went to the governor. She vetoed it. She said that it was a good program, but tech didn't need the money. So when we got the veto back on the House side, we overrode it so that the Greenwood Promise could have those funds for that program.
So you and Floyd actually secured the funding, $50,000, for to be given to Greenwood Promise.
Yes, ma'am. Also, Mike Gambrell was instrumental in helping us to secure those funds.
Well, that's great. And so I guess you had to work together to get other people on your side to override the veto, right?
We did, because it takes 2/3 vote of the House to override veto.
Is that easy to do?
Sometimes, sometimes not. I think it a lot of times depends upon the issue. I don't think when the governor did the veto, from her comments, she understood what the program would provide. But I think it's a real special program that will give children an opportunity to go further in their education that might not otherwise have the opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. Greenwood Promise actually, I think, starts with the class of 2017.
It does.
And then every class from kindergarten forward will have the opportunity. If they, on the student side, there are some responsibilities on the student side. They have to do well in school.
Of course, yes.
Yes.
But a lot of students that do well, they just don't have that financial opportunity, and going to higher education has gotten so expensive now. And I guess I might be telling my age, but when I went to college, it was only like $3,000 a semester.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to have parents that could provide that for me. But now I think it's out of reach for a lot of students.
It is out of reach. And one of the issues that is out there, maybe more on a federal level, but still something, how do we pay for college? So this is a good program. We do need to say that the Greenwood Promise picks up the rest of the financing once lottery tuition and other scholarships kick in. After that, they will pick up the difference.
Yes.
That's right. So it is helpful to cover the last bit so that they make sure they can go. So, well, that was a big boost in the arm to the Greenwood Promise.
It was. It was. And I think they really appreciate it.
Well, that's good. And, of course, Chris Burris has just taken over as executive director.
Yes.
Yes. So got to see her this morning. So congratulations on that one. Now, other things that have been going on, one of the big topics I think a lot of people are interested in, and since District 12 does cover, covers McCormick and what part of Greenwood?
Southern part of Greenwood, Promised Land, all the way to the McCormick County line, down South Greenwood, but not all the way to Callison.
Okay. So it's a good-sized district.
Oh, mile-wise, it's very large because I cover all of McCormick to the Georgia line. And in some places from my house, one way is at least 50 miles.
Wow. That is a long way. So one of the issues that has been going on, and this is something actually that's occurred over several years, has been the John De La Howe and handling of the money, handling of the finances. And I know one of the things that you have been passionate about is about been saving John Dillahow.
Yes. And I think people might have forgot that years ago when Governor Sanford was in office, when he did his budget one year, he just zeroed them out, just took them out altogether. And I think I was the only one that stood up for them at that time. And there was another time when the gym leaked so bad that the children could not have activity in the gym when it rained. So I got them additional funding that year to fix the roof on the gym so that they could have somewhere to have their activities mm-hmm. when it rained. So, and this past year, I was instrumental in working across party lines to get a Senate proviso passed in the House so that the school could remain open and that the board would remain intact and that they would remain in the budget as a line item.
Now, that's very interesting because it did become uncredited for education, correct, this year?
They did.
And how did that come about? Because I think a lot of people aren't clear, and that's actually been a process. It wasn't like, oh, boom, you are all of a sudden unaccredited.
To my understanding, it takes 5 years to lose an accreditation, and the accreditation is lost through the State Department of Education. We had talked several times with Ms. Spearman, and out of her concern for them, she said that there were criteria that they just were not meeting and that they really didn't have any choice but to pull the accreditation to the school. And losing the accreditation to the school did not mean they were no longer a state agency. They are still a state agency.
And what's the purpose of John Dillahow for people that don't know?
John Dillahow has been a safe haven for many years. For at-risk children, it gives them a place to learn responsibility. And also, another thing that people don't realize is that John Dillahow left a will, and there are certain things that they must adhere to according to what's in the will. But it has always been a safe haven for children to help them with behavioral problems and turn them into good citizens for this state. And I recently attended the alumni gathering that they have there mm-hmm. and met many of the alumni. And it has changed over the years because some of the alumni that I talked with, some of them told me that they stayed 8-9 years at that place. And what they learned at John Dillahow, they accredited it to the good citizens that they are today.
Well, having a safe haven, and these are for kids, at-risk kids.
At-risk kids. And one of the unique things about John Dillahow has been is that you did not need a state agency to refer your child to the school, that you as a parent could go and have your child admitted to John Dillahow. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was one of the unique things. And not only would they counsel your child, they would counsel the family. If there was an extended family, they would offer that counseling to the extended family so that when that child goes back home, it's not like they would be put back in a foreign place, that everybody has had counseling and would understand the difficulties that the child had experienced.
That's right. So it is a shame that the program has that it lost its accreditation, but now the McCormick school system is taking over the education part. Is that correct?
It is, and which I think it's a win-win situation for both John Dillahow and for the McCormick School District. I was kind of glad to see that the board decided to go with the McCormick County School District instead of bringing another accredited entity into the area.
That's right. Now, in Tuesday's paper, the November 1st paper of the Index Journal, it says DSS rescinds licensing for wilderness program. Big headlines here. What can you tell us about that?
I can't tell you very much more than what I read in the paper. I do know that they will appeal that. I don't know what exactly needs to be done other than we read in the paper, but they have licensed that program for years.
And what does that program do for the students or for the children?
It gives them, basically, teaches them a lot of discipline. And the living quarters at the wilderness camp have never been air conditioned. It's always had.
It's called a wilderness program for a reason, I'm sure.
Well, that's what I thought until I read about the not licensing by DSS, which I don't understand. But I think it teaches a child a lot of discipline. But from what I'm hearing now, that a lot of wilderness programs, they have these air-conditioned barracks and all this heat in the barracks. And in having some conversation with Dr. Webb some time ago, I do understand that if the temperature got down below a certain level, they would not allow the children to stay in those barracks because it did not have heat.
Right. So that program is out. So what right now is the future of John Delahoe, the way it sits right now?
Well, like I said, it continues to be an agency, and that they have gotten the educational part of it secured. They've signed a contract with the McCormick County School District, which is an accredited school district. I did talk with Ms. Spearman, and she said she was very happy with the agreement that was made between John Delahoe and the McCormick County School District. In the proviso that we passed, there is an advisory committee that will advise the board. Now, the board still is in existence, and the board still has the final say-so about the finances, about which direction that John Delahoe is going to go in. So they will be getting some advisement from this advisory committee, which is composed of several different state agencies.
So I guess the question, you know, one of the questions would be, do you see a future for John Delahoe?
I do. I think John Delahoe should continue to be fully funded. If reelected, and next year, I think when we do the budget debate, I think there needs to be some additional funds put in for some deferred maintenance that they have and have had for some time. But I still feel like John Delahoe needs to be a fully funded agency in this state.
Okay. So, well, let's hope that John Delahoe can shine, because it did serve a certain part of our community, of our people of the state of South Carolina.
It does.
They come from all over. It's not just McCormick. They come from all over, don't they?
At one time, they had more of the students enrolled from the lower part of the state.
Really?
So they come from all over the state, not just in the Greenwood-McCormick area.
Exactly. So that's one topic that you are, of course, interested, passionate about. And there were many times where John Delahoe could have gotten the axe.
Yes.
And it has been able to remain on the rolls, and hopefully will be able to bring itself back. How do you feel about this, Dr. Webb? The head of it, isn't it, Danny Webb?
Yes.
Excuse me. How do you feel about his, under his leadership, that they'll be able to do?
I tell you, Dr. Webb is a very dedicated person. He loves the children. I think his main objective is to take care of the children. He works tirelessly. Sometimes he'll call me 10, almost 11 o'clock at night, and he's still in his office working. I know that's not a requirement that he does that, but he does whatever that he's supposed to do or needs to do, is told to do for those children. And he really is very dedicated to the children, and the children's being committed to them is the most important thing to him, because his concern is the welfare of those children and to provide a safe haven for those children.
Absolutely. You know, it is hard to believe, this is a little off our topic here, but it is hard to believe that we have children in the state of South Carolina living in such poverty. We have one of the highest figures, what is it, fifth from the bottom or something, of children living in poverty. And here in the Greenwood, Ware Shoals, McCormick area has, from what I remember now, this was just a few months ago, higher than, what were we, fifth from the top or so, for having poverty for children in our community. That's hard to believe.
We do. I see it from time to time.
And there needs to be something done about that. It is ridiculous that we don't take care of our own.
It is. And, you know, I think that one of the other things that I'm interested in is public education. And McCormick is not as economically progressive as Greenwood is. But I feel like that those children in that county deserve the same quality education that is any child in this state. And we have to realize now that we don't just compete with our state or maybe the next state, North Carolina or Georgia, but children now have to compete globally. And they have to be prepared to compete on that global level. And I feel like that the legislature does not fund student-based costs as it should in this state.
Equally across the state. Or, you know, wasn't there a lawsuit that a year or so ago that said that South Carolina needed to fund all their districts accordingly, and those that are underfunded needed to be more funded to bring the level of education up across the state?
That's my point about fully funding student-based cost, which we don't do. We did better this year than we have done, but we didn't do what we needed to do. And, you know, it's often talked about in McCormick about the economics of McCormick. If you can't provide a workforce that these industries are looking for, they're not going to come to your town. So you've got to start at kindergarten to get your population trained so that they not only can finish high school, but so that they can go on and get a higher education. McCormick has a lovely school complex now, but I remember before they got that, I think the county was trying to find a county manager, and he brought his wife. She looked at the school, got back in a car, and they left. So, you know, having or being able to provide a good education for children, I think this is one of the things that enhances the quality of life, is good education, being able to have a job, and be able to economically support your family. But it all revolves, I tell children that it all revolves around your education. I say your education is, when you're young, should be like a job. That is your job, to go to school, make good grades, and progress.
What's your passport?
That's your passport.
That's your passport. Yep, that's true.
And one thing I always tell them is that get your education. Once you have your education, I said, that's something that nobody can take away from you. It's yours. But education, 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 and education is your job, and that's what you need to do. Your job is going to school and getting good grades.
Now, you know, you bring up the issue of jobs and jobs in McCormick. What type of industries could come to McCormick?
Well, at this point, I cannot speculate.
Okay.
I do know, however, that I want to continue to work with county council. They've been trying to get a spec building, mm-hmm. so that if they found an industry that was willing to come to McCormick, they would not have to take the time to maybe develop a building or a complex. So they have been working with the Department of Commerce the last year or so in trying to get a spec building in that county, which I think might draw some type of industry mm-hmm. to that area to provide some jobs.
Now, the other thing is, of course, it's not that far to come to Greenwood.
No.
Except you get into the issue of roads, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, but let's hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. There you go, Anna. We are here with Ann Parks this afternoon. She is looking for re-election to District 12 for the House of Representatives. And Ann, I don't know whether a lot of people know it, but you have another business besides being in the House. What is it that you do?
I co-own and run a funeral business that has been in my family since 1935.
Right here in Greenwood.
Right here in Greenwood, located in the same place.
That's right. So, okay, I'm going to ask, how's business at the funeral home?
It's good. We got some people knocking on the door to get in.
People are just dying to get there. There you go. Nice little funeral home humor here this afternoon. But, so you run that when you're not running back up and down the road to Columbia.
Yes.
Speaking of running back up and down the roads to Columbia, are you working on things now while the House is not in session?
There are some things that we work on. There are a lot of meetings going on. In fact, I've got some people that I will talk to right after the election next week about issues that they're concerned about and things that they need to see happen with the budget for things in Greenwood. So it's always a meeting and talking, and that's what I like to do. I can't read minds, and I like to hear from my constituents. I want to know what your concerns are. I want to know what you're thinking. If there's something that you're interested in, even when we're in session, if there's a bill that you have concerns about, because we have so many bills, and sometimes they may be in committee, in a subcommittee, might not be in the House, might be in the Senate, but if you bring it to my attention, I can track it down and tell you what's going on with it. And I always welcome that. I have an open door policy. I always have, because I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. I want to know what it is that you think that I can do for your concerns, because I always remember that I was sent by the constituents from Greenwood. That's who I'm there to represent, and I want to do what's best for the Greenwood area and McCormick.
Now, how long have you been in the House?
18 years.
18 years. Have you seen a lot of changes in that 18 years?
Quite a few. Quite a few changes.
For the better? I'm sorry, I have to ask that question. For the better?
Some things.
Yeah?
Some things are for the better. Some things are the same. But I think it's from year to year, things change.
Yeah.
Things don't stay the same.
That's true. And as you get ready to drive back and forth, particularly to Columbia, one of the things that we're all concerned about, and I think a lot of us didn't see enough movement on, is the roads that we have here in South Carolina.
I think the biggest thing that we got hung up on last year, which was called the roads bill, but in that bill, there really wasn't one nickel to fix one road. That bill was more
Wait a minute. There wasn't one nickel to fix a road? Well, I'm hanging it up right here, folks. I just heard it now.
But,
what do you mean?
Well, that bill had more to do with who would control DOT.
Oh.
And we got that settled, I guess you could say. But there was a lot of back and forth between the House and the Senate over that bill, which was, you know, and I think most of the power was to go to the governor. But at the end, the House provided some funding to start work on roads immediately. But what we need to see happen is that we need to set aside some funding that needs to reoccur every year, specifically for roads, because our roads have gotten in such poor shape. Once we get them up to par, because DOT was telling us it's this enormous amount that we need to provide them with every year to get them, just to get them up to par.
Well, isn't part of the problem is that the roads were put on the back burner and not maintained over these last X amount of years?
That's true, yeah. And we don't ever need to let that happen again. And because, you know, if you look at it, roads affect businesses tremendously.
Tourism. Our part of our state is very big on tourism.
Sure. And I've had several residents just right around in this area who have put some claims in because they got extensive damage to their vehicles from roads being in such bad condition.
Sure.
But I think what needs to happen is that we need to find a reoccurring amount that goes in the budget every year to
What is the way to do it? Because it seems to me that seems to be the big problem. The governor says that she will not go with a gas tax. It's got to be a revenue neutral if one is put in. We have the lowest or next to the lowest, I don't know, the lowest gas tax. What are we going to do? How are we going to finance the roads?
That's one thing. The governor put so many conditions on us that if we did this, she would veto it. If we did that, she would veto it.
I guess you can always override a veto, though, can't you, Ann?
That's true.
Yeah.
We can override the veto. But you have some legislators that like to try to make everybody happy. But I find that's not possible.
Right.
In anything you do, somebody's going to be disgruntled. Somebody's not going to like it.
What would you see as a way to solve this problem?
Well, it seems like we got good response from the citizens in this state about a gas tax. However, you look at it from one side and you look at it from another side, if it's going to affect businesses, and it's kind of like a ripple effect. If they've got to pay more for gas, it kind of ripples down to your everyday citizen, because whatever service or whatever product that they're providing, of course they're going to raise the cost on it, which means you're going to have to pay more. You're going to have to pay more at the pump, and you're going to have to pay more for products. But we did have some new money that came in.
Where did it come from?
Last year. I don't remember where it came from, but I think we need to take some of that money and put it in reoccurring funds. And I can't say that enough, because when you put it reoccurring, that means it's going to be there every year. And you're not going to have to search for it, or we need to put some money in. It's there, and it's there every year. But not only do we need to put reoccurring funds in it, but we have got to put funds in there and play catch up.
Right. And there are also, if I remember correctly, that after y'all did the budget, they said that there was a budget shortfall.
Well, see, what most people don't realize is we do the budget on an estimated amount.
Right.
So the funds, because a lot of times we come up short and people say, well, where did the money go? Well, we never got it.
Right.
So in doing the budget on a projected amount, it doesn't always come.
Sure.
So, and it's not like we lost it or we spent it. It never gets there. So sometimes there's a difference in what's projected and what actually comes in.
Sure. But that still makes the budget short, and some things, didn't they have to be cut back some in order to accommodate it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as the gas tax or any of the methods to do it, unless we take, really, I'm going to say, huge amounts of money, we're never going to get it caught up.
Well, we've got to have some source for it to come from. And you do have some citizens that don't want to raise any kind of tax regardless.
What about fees, like whether it's boats or cars or license fees or this type of thing? Should we be looking at the fees and everything that we pay as it relates even to our tax structure? One of the things I know they're working on is looking at the tax structure, because...
You have to think about it like this, looking at the tax structure, and there are some legislators that are looking at the tax structure. But you take, for instance, down on... the lower part of the state that is on the water, they have a great objection to raising boat tax. So, you know, it depends upon where you are. And people have to realize that sometimes it's hard for us to come together because you got 124 different minds, different ideas. But I hope that we will be able to come together. Because it's not, we just have to, it's a must. We've got to find a resolution to this situation about the roads.
I mean, not only is it affecting truckers coming through with transporting goods and whatnot,
that's correct.
It's also will affect our tourism. If you are being in one part of the North Carolina and you come into South Carolina and all of a sudden you see a big difference in the roads, that's huge too.
Yeah, and it's going to eventually affect the economy, and it's going to be very noticeable.
That's right. And not only that, of course, we had a big issue as far as when we had the floods last year with the dams and some of the bridges and everything, and that is still being worked on. The federal tax money comes in, doesn't cover all the needs of our roads because we've got so many state roads here that it doesn't affect.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
And what is it? South Carolina has the fourth largest road system in the country. Am I right on that?
We do.
We
have 40,000 miles of roads in this state.
How big is our state? We have a lot of roads.
We have a lot of roads.
Yeah, and so it's a big problem. I certainly would hope that I think y'all did make a start on it, but like you said, you've got to have something reoccurring, and we need big chunks of money put towards it. But we also need it well supervised to make sure that we're not spending our money foolishly on the roads.
Well, see, that was the big argument to begin with.
Yes.
So I think that has gotten settled. So that's why it was called the roads bill, but didn't have any money to fix any roads. It was basically about control.
Okay. It always comes down to control, I think, in politics. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. I'm here with Ann Parks. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. When we come back, we've got some other topics that Ann wants to talk about. Ann is running for re-election to House seat District 12 for the House of Representatives. Give us a call, 229-7984. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here this afternoon. We're live at Sharp Facets Gallery, and I do want to remind everybody there is an Emerald football game at Emerald right here, and you'll be able to hear it all right here on WCRS. Our broadcasters, Rob Gilchrist and Jonathan Graves, will begin broadcasting about 7:15. Kickoff is at 7:30. And, of course, it is senior night, so make sure you tune in or just go to the game. It's going to be a beautiful night for a game over there at Frank Hill Stadium at Emerald High School. Okay, well, I am also here this afternoon with Ann Parks. She is looking to be reelected to seat number 12 for our district number 12 here in South Carolina. So, Ann, what other topics? We've talked some about Delahoe. We've talked some about education. We've talked about the roads. What else would you like to talk about this afternoon?
The service that our state provides to the mental illness in this state.
We've talked about this one before.
We just do not provide enough service for people with mental illness. And I think that because we do not provide enough service, that a lot of times it falls in the lap of the law enforcement. I think that they could be doing other things than trying to counsel people with mental illness. Sometimes they may need to be called in, but I think I heard the other day that now law enforcement is providing courses so that when they're out in the field of how
to the officers
mm-hmm. to training to, so that they will know how to deal with a person that has mental illness. And I think it takes up a lot of their time, because if they have a mentally ill person and they have to transport them to the hospital, where they've got to stay with that person, they can't leave them, that takes them off of the street. That takes them out of what they really need to be doing, maybe patrolling or whatever. But they have to stay with that patient until that patient is released or admitted or taken back to the to jail.
And a mentally ill people being in jail isn't really the answer.
No, it's not. I've seen some instances that if there were some institution that could provide them with the 24-hour supervision that they need, they would not be in the prison system. Yeah. And once that person is in the prison system, well, then it's the state's responsibility to provide them what they need for mental illness and all of the other necessities that they need. So that puts an additional burden on the state.
Well, I think this is a problem not only in our state but across our country. I mean, we used to have facilities where mentally ill people would go and be cared for and get the right medication and this type of thing. And then I don't remember what year it was is that they said that these facilities were no longer legal, or it was against the person's rights. I don't remember exactly why, but we basically closed down a lot of these facilities across the country. And we have not come up with an answer since then.
No, there is maybe one or two facilities in the state of South Carolina that will provide 24-hour care or 24-hour supervision to mental patients. Now we have a fine mental facility in Greenwood, but it only deals with outpatient. it does not have 24-hour supervision.
And I think that's how a lot of people end up out on the streets. They have mental health issues, and they cannot function.
That's true. They do. They end up on the streets, and most of the time when they end up on the streets, they end up in the prison system. Because law enforcement has to get them off the street.
So what is the answer? I mean, we only have a few minutes left here, but what is the answer when we talk about dealing with mental health and dealing with some of these issues?
I don't think mental health, like so many things in this state, is funded as it should be. I remember there was a time, and I'm still angry about it, that I had some funds put in the budget for McCormick County to have an outpatient center built. And it was a line item. But they never got the money because the director of mental health decided he wasn't going to send it to them. And he didn't. And I've been fighting that for a long time, and I was real angry that he didn't feel like it was necessary for them to have a facility that they needed. And at the time, they've gotten a better place now, but at the time, they had patients' files in the restroom, and they were in a very cramped, tight space.
Mm-hmm.
And the money that I had put in the budget was not enough to do a spectacular place, but it was enough for them to get started. But they never got it.
So you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. So, Anne, what is the future of dealing with mental health for the state? Then it goes on to the federal level and also on the local level. What is the answer? What can be done?
Well, I think funding, and we need to have more facilities that will give 24-hour supervision, because I think I've told this story before. I've got a friend, and if she was not able to find 24-hour supervision for her nephew, because he did not receive 24-hour supervision, was left on his own, did not take his medicine, ended up committing a crime, and he's now in the prison system, which I feel like it could have been avoided if he had been able to get in a 24-hour facility that would have given him his meds, kept him on his meds, because he was not mentally stable enough to do this for himself, that he wouldn't be in prison now. So I think that it's like with a lot of issues in this state, it boils down to funding.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to provide a service that's needed.
Well, what about the funding? We're going to run over here a little bit, but what about the funding? Last year they were talking about we had a surplus, then we didn't have a surplus. I'm not really sure I understand all these issues, but what is it going to take to be able to do something like this, or some the road tax? I mean, how is there the will down there in Columbia to come together and get some of these issues done for the people of South Carolina?
Well, yeah, like I said before, a lot of legislators do not believe in any kind of tax. I don't care what it's for. They're not going to vote for a tax. So I don't know if the tax would work, even though there has been overwhelming support from the citizens of South Carolina of a tax increase to get our roads repaired.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a tax increase for roads, I think every single dime of it needs to go to the roads.
Mm-hmm.
and not divert it somewhere else. But we, like I said, we got to find a way to do some roads. And it's hard when you have all of these different people coming at you during budget time, because everybody wants and needs
their
piece of the pie. And a lot of them need pie.
Mm-hmm.
So it is some hardcore decisions have to be made. And in a lot of cases, we do the best that we can. Everybody's not going to always be satisfied. But there are many, 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 many hands that are out during the budget process. And the budget process actually begins very early.
Yes, it does. You know, I had Mike Pitts on this morning, and he was a couple of things that he told us about was a PTSD program that he saw out in Montana that used horses. Mm-hmm. And what a great success. And he wants to come back he's back here, but down there in the legislature and see if there's not something that can't be done for PTSD, which comes down to a mental health issue.
Yes.
Yes. And he said about that. The other issue I asked him about this morning that I think is real, real important is the fact that it's the federal government, I think it was approximately 28 years ago, mandated the fact that they had to have a program through, I believe it's DSS, for funding, to be able to get the child care payments to the parent that should be getting them. And we've been paying out fines after fines, and the program has never been implemented. And now I understand it's going to be another year. And the federal government mandated this 20-some years ago. I mean, that's part of a responsibility that I think that as a state that should not keep happening. We shouldn't keep paying fines. We should just get the program done.
I don't understand either.
So
I'm just as bewildered as you as why do we keep paying the fines? It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it's a waste. But anyways, we have covered a lot of ground here this afternoon, and I wanted to give you a couple of minutes to tell the folks why you should be reelected to House seat number 12 for District 12 right here in South Carolina. Ann Parks, you're on.
Thank you. I think that I am the candidate who has proven her abilities, qualifications, and commitment to represent the citizens of District 12 of Greenwood and McCormick counties. I do want you to know that when I'm in Columbia, I never forget who sent me to Columbia and who I am representing. I always remember that I am your representative there to look after the needs of Greenwood and McCormick counties. So a vote for me on November the 8th is a vote for current leadership and not leadership from the past. So I hope that you will vote for me because of my proven abilities and because of my commitment. And I want to continue to look at some of these endeavors of things that affect the state, that affect my community, and that affect my neighborhood. So vote for Ann Parks on November the 8th.
Thank you very much, Ann Parks. Nice having you on the show here today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. That's going to do it for us. Do want to remind you, I'll be back in the morning right here on WCRS. Make sure you check out our Facebook page, WCRS.AM Radio. We have posted all the interviews that we have done with the politicos. Mike Pitts, I believe, is up now. If you missed that this morning, you can go back and hear that now from our website, WCRS, 1450AM.net, or check it out through Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio. Bye-bye, everybody.